other saw them when they came across the many clangored mart. But in mine eyes and in my heart they passed, as might the pillared flame of lightning loosened on the tombs, or errant suns that wander by to dawn on the Cimmeriae. Great monarchs, proud and cypress-tall, with zones and crowns of argentry, they were who proffered royally full urns of pulsing gems to all. The blood-warm gems of lunar wombs, pale ores and opals, pavonine and beryls, like to leopard's eyne. Their eyes were lit with alien day, were filled of alien worlds. Their feet with starry splendors paved the street, and silver dust of some bright way fell from their garments with perfumes more strange than breath of vernal gales from Saturn's molly-cinctured veils. What embassy were they from suns of Algebar or Capricorn, from planets of remoter morn in flaming fields where Taurus runs, or haply come immediate from out a four-dimensioned world with the occlusive ether furled? They strode upon the swimming pave. They towered by the trembling spires, tall as apocalyptic fires above the peoples of the grave. But sightless and inveterate, to Mammon vowed, the throng went by, channeled beneath an iron sky. Yea, blinder than the steel and stone, men took not from their proffered store one gift of all the gifts they bore, but sued for gold to gods foreknown. I, too, bemused, inebriate, amort with splendor, could but stand and see them pass with empty hand. Yes, dear fiends, it is I, Dr. Howland Owl, and this is the Ask Dr. Howl Show, live on radio. Yes, dear fiends, it is I, Dr. Howland Owl. Etherettes and rocket rookies, take note. My show online is coming soon, on the 20th of April. And we have unusual excerpts to show, as well as a theater in which I, Dr. Howell, may answer your questions, which you may submit live. Just go to our website at AskDrHowellShow.com, and one click will bring you into the amphitheater where our performance takes place. Has anyone within the sound of my voice seen a film, a French film, called The Amazing Adventures of Adèle Blanc-Sec? That's one of the things we are going to excerpt in our monster movie moments, and we have so many monster movie moments to extract from that film that you will be seeing quite a lot of that work in future iterations of the online Zoom Twitch show, the Ask Dr. Howell Show, the home edition. In what we show this time, the beautiful Adèle Blanc-Sec tames and rides a pterodactyl over Paris by moonlight. And in later ones, we have footage of her swooping down with her pterodactyl to prevent an execution when a poor philosopher is going to be guillotined. The screeching flying reptile gathers the prisoner up and with a flap of its wings, accidentally, or perhaps not accidentally, knocks the executioner down into the channel that holds the victim of La Guillotine, and then the blade suddenly descends so that the killer is killed and the victim saved, snatched into the sky. And also in this film, the dead come to life, and many miracles, malign and profoundly joyful, occur because it deals with occult themes which are touching on the strange synergy between different universes. Yes, this is a remarkable film, and no one we talked to had even heard of it. But it was made, I believe, by Paul Jeunet, a wonderful French filmmaker responsible for many other fantastic Euro films. It does not have the aroma of Hollywood about it at all. And it is beautiful and funny and numinous, heavy with the presence of the hovering supernatural, the mystery beyond our world of cause and effects, of Newtonian mathematics and physics as we understand it, because supernatural is a province of something above nature, super above natural nature, something which can descend into nature and interfere with it, but then withdraw and allow our world to go on in its own way. It is as if we were characters in a book which is still being written, and the author decides to change a chapter or a person. So the author dips in, and the change is made that comes from outside their universe. And our universe is also subject to such interference. So that if, for example, the gods of old, or the immanent will that moves and urges everything, decides to drop in and add some inexplicable phenomena, or to change the course that we have set, abiding here on this world and in this time, the miraculous will occur, and it will be impossible to prove, since our universe, our world, will then busily set about incorporating all of the changes as part of the normal historical sequence. Yes, the world of physics is very efficient in that way. So this splendid film in excerpts will provide just one of the many diversions which we are advancing in our next show. And the other monster movie clip contains something which may be more familiar, extracts from The Fiend Without a Face. We have shown excerpts from that film in the past, but not these. If you've ever wondered what it's like when a brain and spinal cord comes down the chimney and then leaps on a helpless victim and kills him, that is in the excerpts. And we will see the mayor of a small Canadian province attacked by another invisible monster, which busily sucks out his brain and spinal cord and all the major nerves. These thought creatures live on human nervous tissue, and the brain is what they most prize, and it builds their unusual structure, which is why they take that particular shape. And a more ghastly thing you can't imagine, particularly since they make a hideous sucking, pumping sound, and a swishing and a thumping as they proceed about their infernal business. And they are mortal, shot by humans, guns. They erupt in fountains of blood, which bubble noisily out of them as their bodies spasmodically twitch in death. Yes, we have all this in our upcoming show. We also have an excerpt from Pube Fest 24, in which I was a participant, and the music of Rubik's Pube as our musical moment, and other surprises. And we welcome a new participant, Trixie von Mothersbaugh, who is going to be a big part of our shows from now on, if all is well and all manner of things are well. Has anyone heard recently of the Laudatores Temporis Acti? This is as good a spot, a place to start as any. Let us set the scene. The 17th century Portuguese sea captain Luiz da Silveira, in his book De Gentibus et Moribus Asiae, printed in Lisbon in 1669, refers somewhat obliquely to an Eastern sect, whether Indian or Chinese, we are not told, which he calls, using a Latin tag, Laudatores Temporis Acti. The good captain is no metaphysician or theologian, but he nonetheless makes clear the nature of time past as conceived by the worshippers. The past, to us, is merely a section of time, or a series of sections that were once the present and that may now be approximately recalled by memory or by history. Both memory and history make these sections, of course, part of the present. And one thing there will always be more of in the future is the past. To the worshippers, the past is absolute. It never had a present, nor can it be remembered or even guessed at. Neither unity nor plurality can be ascribed to it, since these are attributes of the present. The same may be said of its denizens, if the plural be allowed, with respect to their color, size, weight, shape, and so on. Nothing about the beings of this once that never was can be either affirmed or denied. Captain Silveira remarks on the utter hopelessness of the sect. The past, as such, could have no inkling of its being worshipped, and could afford no help or comfort to its votaries. Had the captain given us the native name or some other clue about this curious community, further investigation would be easier. We know they had neither temples nor sacred books. Are there still any worshippers? Or do they now, together with their dim belief, belong to the past? A curious conundrum. But it does come from a printed book. And using the principle of argumentum ad verecundiam, we present it here and now, this night, at this moment, on this show. Last week, we had K-Rob as a guest, and then, surprisingly and pleasantly, world traveler David Normal, back from certain regions of the mysterious East, where he participated in demonic ceremonies, honoring curious gods with huge fangs jutting from their mouths and strange appearance overall. These he was kind enough to show me, and we had a bit of chat. I hope Mr. Normal will return for another iteration. As it is, we have the usual material to present here.
Well, what was your short question, please?
Gosh, I had one.
Think carefully.
One question only.
Darn my sons.
Oh, yeah,
you might ask the riddle of the Sphinx.
When the show really does come on.
Yeah, when it really does start, right?
It will start soon.
Will it be a highly philosophical show?
Or will it might be. We've got Jainer here, after all.
Yes,
as you can see. And he's going to be changing the balance from good to from one to the other, from light to darkness, from alpha
to omega. From sacred to profane.
From profane to sacred. And that reminds me, we should be watching the monitor now, because he's doing some EVA, and he might be floating near the hull. And we should take a look out here on the monitor.
Using our magic Jainer seeing glass.
You know, of course, they're going to get lost and never return.
And we'll send this storm out after them.
A cosmic storm.
Everything we
light
say on the radio.
Let them go out for a coffee. He'll never come.
You know, of course, that at the end of the Cretaceous period, 65 million years ago, the Earth passed from a cloud of atomic interference, sort of electrical fog through which the entire solar system had been traveling for millions of years.
And we may enter it again.
This insulating etheric medium caused the destruction of most major life forms on the planet.
But new life began.
But you know, they're those underground life forms that outnumber and outweigh all the life forms that live on the surface.
Not counting underground cartoonists. Ever performed was performed in this quadrant. XLJKBTC10 Troy on KPFA 24.1 FM Wonder Radio Dial in the 20th century on a tiny rundown dirt ball which we call the Earth. That's old age radio.
So let's go back.
Billions of years.
Back.
Through lustrums and epicycles of cosmic time. To the first beginnings of all things. The Earth was without form and void, and darkness moved sluggishly on the face of the deep. Continental masses were unstable. They burbled and steamed with boiling lava. And the droning voices of evil demons were all that could be heard. You know, I can't hear in my headphones, but there's supposed to be a vein of pure Nelsonium right ahead, which we're going to extract and inject into our atomic piles, trying to control this painful itching and swelling. Yes, it's a remarkable phenomenon. If we dig only 3 meters further, we'll find beneath the frigid subsoil, right under this frozen baby mammoth, a vein of pure Nelsonite.
One lump of this miraculous substance can cause a flying submarine to go 6 times around the Earth with all its automatic controls perfectly set.
Notorious.
As revealed by Gnostic sages many years ago in Lamazares on the high slopes of Mount Crumpet. Crumbling replica of ancient glory. Never mind those pessimistic peregrinations. Our callers, our listeners, know and expect better treatment than they're getting now. They know the playback system. Well, you know, I gotta take the phonetic mumbling equivalents to test of the Federal Communications Commission and the International Bureau of Demonology to satisfy radio standards and tyrants.
We never bother with that over here at Radio Valencia because we're not radio, and no federal authority or any other cares about any word we may injudiciously utter. We may play material from KPFA, but that's from back in the day, and here we've got Ray Dio Valencia.
What are you doing listening to this show?
We need your help.
Most people are asleep. Why are you awake?
We need your help.
We need your help. Tell us why you're up. Yeah, I know. We know you're not somebody else. If you were asleep, we could be beaming furniture commercials into your head like everybody else. But you're up, and we want to know why.
Flatulence
makes me stumble forward and crash against bystanders at times. So, do you have any embarrassing problems?
Not that I care to broadcast.
Oh, no one knows who you are. You can be bold and profligate and yet discreet and silent at the same time through the magic of radio. So what's your beef? Tell us about your intimate pimples. Come on. Tell us about those problems that are private, that lurk in your drawers or wherever. Come on, open those drawers wide to the piercing blue noses of Inquisition.
Loathsome socks?
Well, everybody has a few of those, fella. Just drop them in the laundry hamper and you'll be clean as the driven snow.
I wrote a book on the subject.
Then they're holy, holy. And shout hosannas to the skies. Make the welkin ring and the roof of heaven echo with the glad cries of the angelic host.
Who don't wear socks, by the way.
Yes, they're just holy.
Well, darn those socks, anyway.
That's what I've seen.
It takes a long time. You sit there sewing up a hole in the socks, and you could be writing a symphony or making love to a beautiful woman.
Or watching monster movies on TV.
That's about all. Thanks.
I'm tending to agree with
this recording will not repeat. Thank you.
People of Earth, look at you. People of Earth, look at you. This is a voice speaking to you from thousands of miles outside your atmosphere.
Everybody, look at your son, and the entire staff. Since one must draw the cartoons anyway, one way or another. And I am working on an incredibly intense graphic project.
Is that caller still there?
Yeah.
Turn that caller to the golden day.
Save yourself.
It's just kind of interesting to hang out here.
You mean in air limbo?
Let it all hang out.
Somewhere between the phone and the radio.
Do you miss puzzling evidence?
To hear that voice.
What do you think of the Don Joyce Mobius Rex Dr. Howell show?
I don't know.
You don't even know that you're being recorded right now. No. What you say, your mumbling and meaningless meandering, will be broadcast at 3 p.m. in Texas. Thousands of people will hear you.
So much volumetric space in what is really a tight studio. They're absolutely absolutely professionals.
J.R. Bob
and, of course, the living avatar of the Church of the Subgenius.
Flag.
His face is the one big assembly of dots that shine in the dark.
Flag.
His grin is the one that's friendly, but so is the grin of the shark. He's Bob. Bob don't ever change. He's Bob. Always will be Bob. His life is the one with the dottle that rains on the roofs like fire.
And starts
His neck
fires.
Is the one with the wattle inflaming your desire. He's Bob. Bob don't ever change.
That's because he's almost
Bob.
Impossible to look
Always
in the face.
Always will be Bob.
Once you look at Bob one time, you want to look at anything else.
She was a righteous friend.
Many people look
she
at his neck.
She had lots of friends named Johnny when Bob he hit the trail.
Sad, but
Bob,
my case
went up
too.
To heaven to fade Jehovah one. Bob he drew a straight seven. Jehovah he had none.
And that's curious.
Bob don't
Since Jehovah is omnipotent, why does he make a mistake playing cards with Bob?
Bob wrote down with the devil who said, Bob, you better pray. Bob whang on his head with a shovel. He make that devil say, he's Bob.
And why would
Bob
the devil want
change.
Bob or anybody
he's
to
Bob.
Pray?
Always will be Bob. But it was surely a sad day when Bob he came to town. He smiled and he waved on that bad day, but Wellman shot him down. He's Bob. Bob don't ever change. He's Bob. Always will be Bob.
So let me get this straight. This show in some way is on YouTube? Really? Well, you were probably viewing the marvelous videos of VJ Pussycat.
Bob,
I wish I could hear, but I fear to mess with the studio monitor. In my ignorance, I might derail the show and cause it to drop off the trestle, pulling all the cars, the coal, the drive rod still running, and the smoke streaming. I just can't stand to do that. It's hard enough to stoke the engine of this program.
What was that, though? An Orgone box, is that the prize for our lucky listener?
Go on.
We're going to strap our lucky listener into the giant Orgone box and
rock it away.
Yeah, we used to do that. A certain person lost the record and other things.
It's time to operate.
Stimulate the attention gland. That's right.
Which, of course.
Surgically open the third nostril.
Like my show coming up. My Ask Dr. Hal Show, the home edition.
We broadcast during the twilight hours, etc., etc.
With excerpts from
Twilight,
Rubik's Pew. With excerpts from The Fiend Without a Face.
Yeah, that's right.
With excerpts from The Amazing Adventures of Adele Blanc Sec, which we highly recommend.
Out with it.
And the poem A Winter's Tale by Dylan Thomas, never before recited by me.
Government agencies, regardless of any previous commercial commitment.
Meanwhile, politics causes us to live in a hellscape of a disintegrating nation. Where do you prefer to be?
Completely.
Listening
the signature at the
or
bottom of that note.
Fleeing from tyrannical Tyjay
the
or
station
Bob
was
J.R. Bob Dobbs.
J.R. Bob Dobbs.
J.R. Bob Dobbs.
Just have to ask another question.
Instrumentality of worlds.
The show of the submen. The dwellers underground. And they do exist.
Like the Loveland frogmen.
Strange pre-Neolithic survivors into the world. Or perchance, mutated though they be, and gnarled and twisted from their lives of tunneling without light through the subgenial substratum.
Yes, well, it's not as bad as we're making out. It's
pseudo-paleolithic precursors of future man.
It's a way to exist.
The sublime subgenial status of future man argues the latter interpretation.
But others...
The old short-off grant that it indeed be so.
Including... you know, what's his name?
Knew the pathetic reality.
Who wrote Last and First Men?
Procedures.
Olaf Stapledon. He said that there would be a winged stage in man's future when humans had wings and our ideas of angels are simply racially looking forward to our status as semi-volant beings.
Only under men, but nonetheless, of this enormous army of gimps and wimps, I, Dr. Howell, approach almost a human.
Being a common man, well, I wouldn't want to go that far.
Both subhuman and a subgenius, I am almost a human. At least we undermen understand what we undertake, what we take down under the surface of what we understand, down, pulled down the undertow into the underpinnings of the unconscious.
Make sure you have clean underwear.
This substratum, we, the undermen, root and burrow, our burrows tunneling past roots and the warm earth smell of a bean burrow.
And if anyone knows,
no matter how macho you are, you're still just a little Chaco in the gazpacho.
Yes. If anyone read my story in an underground comic, which I did with the late Ronald Saul, caused galloping insect phobia, our character, the protagonist, one Professor Byron Harris Brainerd, hears strange scratching sounds and looks under his refrigerator in the basement, and then something seems to grasp his head and pull him forward, an enormous pair of mandibles, and a huge doodle bug larger than him pulls him down through slimy tunnels to the underground world ruled by insect men and an insect woman with whom the character is compelled biochemically to enjoy sexual relations. The result of this unfortunate thing is an unfortunate thing. A semi-insectoid infant, which it is our protagonist's duty to raise to whatever majority it may hope to attain in the new world.
I don't know. Well, he's 23 years old, and I say we give her 16 bob.
It's been so long since I heard the lovely voice of Fantasy Caller.
So, Ant People, you saw this story? It's in one of Clifford Neal's comics. I submitted it to Weirdo, but the editor at that time, Peter Bagg, did not want it. And that was the last group of multiple pages I submitted to Weirdo magazine, although in issue 27 I participated in the Gary Arlington Jam, which marked my last appearance in the mag. Still, Robert Crumb had faith in me. He published 12 pages of my material and even drew my character on the cover.
Ted Koppel revealed a suspicious wardrobe for James Baker, while Mikhail Gorbachev bought covert aid for safe sex.
Old newspaper. Yesterday's newspaper, that's what it all is. Old news, chewed, digested, and ready to leave behind.
The conspiracy.
I thought it was deflecting.
And it's important.
Deflecting the Breatharian conspiracy. That's not difficult to do.
Downstairs.
You know, the Breatharians claimed you didn't need to eat at all.
Well, that light has no...
Veganism was too extreme for them. They thought that just breathing air would keep you going. And it all went along fine until their leader was found secretly enjoying a large hero sandwich. No kidding. That's what happened. It caused the Breatharian cult to dissolve. But today we have the Zizians and other interesting groups, and of course, subgeniuses.
You know, it's a real mellow and...
Starlight, star bright. First star
blobs
I've seen
and
tonight.
Blobs of sidewalk slime. I'm stepping on them all the time.
Be to push.
They have their business, I have mine.
Business, I have mine.
I've looked at slugs that way. But now they just obscure the ground.
They just obscure the ground. They're there for miles around.
I'd like to take a walk downtown, but slugs get in my way. I've looked at slugs from both sides now.
I've looked at slugs from both sides now, from front to back, and still somehow its slug secretions I recall. I really don't know slugs at all.
Well, then you should participate in a program of study. And study these creatures.
Desecrate the unprofaned.
Though earth may be, must other worlds be stained? And in the end, then, what strange minds or eyes shall know our truths and recognize our lies?
One of those little wimpy gimps who doesn't dare enunciate. He takes up our time, he ties up our line, and he won't say a thing, and I think that's a crime.
Well, let's not be too harsh.
Maybe this one has a little backbone. Hello, you're on the air.
You're right. 500 and what? 560 calories?
Water all the way.
Bob Dobbs, he's no slob. Bob Dobbs, he's no fool.
He's slob or something.
He's the head of that subgenius church, which means he's super cool.
That's not slobber in his pipe. That's just a little drool.
Now let's go over that again. You say you saw some sort of monster.
All of whom regarded me with a questioning and slightly hostile look.
Give us a call at 848-4425 in the last waning sputtering minutes of the subgenius program.
Ignore that. Of course, that number does not reach us here at Radio Valencia.
Call anytime, day or night.
And our phone is defunct, so you can't call in.
I expect you what's happened here.
Turn the incubator off. Release that child into the cold, frigid morning.
You can lick banana slugs
sometime.
And chew the abdomens of bugs.
Shut that incubator down.
It's better, some would say, than drugs. I've heard some people say.
Close off that golden light. Choke off that feeding tube.
And so close off that golden light.
Among the garbage cans.
It's really going to be all right.
Let him know.
And I'll be here a while tonight to help you on your way.
Nothing's free. Put your nose to the grindstone and your shoulder to the wheel.
Painful.
Pick up that briefcase and start swinging along with a snappy step, a shoe shine, and a sharp.
I used to carry such a briefcase.
Charge sales tax and business tax and have a business phone in your residence.
Let's get down to brass tacks.
President Bush, it's all his fault.
President Bush, the first or the second?
So many repugnant emotions.
The Republicans.
These sides are like the sides of a living organism, pulsating and warm.
Mitchell used the word C instead
of approximately body temperature.
She placed everyone around my receptionist.
Veined with capillary-like lines.
Microphone.
And other nameless anatomical structures.
Mr. Guest, you better be over here.
These are round embryons circulating and surfacing from the sluggish surface of the liquid
skin. When your name is called, stand right up in front of the microphone.
They are unborn souls waiting to appear on the subgenius program.
Everyone receives instructions.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to make a small apology on behalf of the staff and management of the subgenius program tonight. We did experience a few technical difficulties, and we're working on that glitch in the system, but a few bugs have still gotten into it, and, well, we're just as incensed about it as you are. We're
working on
that problem now, and we hope you'll stay with us as the show swings into action in its most dynamic phase.
Hey, cut it out.
Yes, the show is really cooking now that it's not even supposed to be on the
air. And that cooking aroma.
Most of you folks probably think it's time to rise, shine, and give God glory, but
Doesn't happen anymore either.
There's a bunch of subgeniuses here, and they don't intend to yield the scepter and the crown.
a whole bunch of sub-geniuses. Look away from this slow-motion train wreck. And now we come to the golem. Not Gollum, that cave-dwelling creature that lived so long beneath the misty mountains, but the strange creature created out of mud and animated by cryptic magic. Yes, the golem. In a book inspired by infinite wisdom, nothing can be left to chance. Not even the number of words it contains or the order of the letters. This is what the Kabbalists thought. And they devoted themselves to the task of counting, combining, and permutating the letters of the scriptures, fired by a desire to penetrate the secrets of God. Dante stated that every passage of the Bible has a fourfold meaning: the literal, the allegorical, the moral, and the spiritual. Johannes Scotus Erigena, closer to the concept of divinity, had already said that the meanings of the scriptures are infinite, like the hues in a peacock's tail. The Kabbalists would have approved this view. One of the secrets they sought in the Bible was how to create living beings, the thought which also occupied the mind of Victor Frankenstein when he walked through the woods as a young man and saw the power of lightning as a bolt of it struck an overhanging branch. It was said of demons that they could make large and bulky creatures like the camel, but were incapable of creating anything delicate or frail. And Rabbi Eliezer denied them the ability to produce anything smaller than a barley grain. Golem was the name given to the man created by combinations of letters. The world knows this. And the word golem means, literally, a shapeless or lifeless clod. Let us go to the Talmud, to the Book of Sanhedrin, 65b. If the righteous wished to create a world, they could do so by trying different combinations of the letters of the ineffable names of God. Rabba succeeded in creating a man whom he sent to Rabbi Zerah. Rabbi Zerah spoke to him, but as he got no answer, he said, "You are a creature of magic. Go back to your dust." Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Oshaya, two scholars, spent every Sabbath eve studying the Book of Creation, by which means they brought into being a three-year-old calf that they then used for the purposes of supper. Yes, veal is kosher. Now Schopenhauer, in his book Will in Nature, writes in chapter 7, on page 325 of the first volume of his Zauberbibliothek Magic Library, Horst summarizes the teachings of the English mystic Jane Lead in this way: "Whoever possesses magical powers can, at will, master and change the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdoms. Consequently, a few magicians working in agreement could make this world of ours return to the state of paradise. The Golems. Fame in the West is owed to the work of the Austrian writer Gustav Meyrink, who in the fifth chapter of his dream novel Der Golem, written in 1915, writes, "It is said that the origin of the story goes back to the 17th century. According to lost formulas of the Kabbalah, a rabbi, Judah Lo Ben Bezabel, made an artificial man, the aforesaid golem, so that he would ring the bells and take over all the menial tasks of the synagogue. He was not a man, exactly, and had only a sort of dim, half-conscious, vegetative existence. By the power of a magic tablet, which was placed under his tongue, and which attracted the free sidereal energies of the universe, this existence lasted during the daylight hours. But one night, before evening prayer, the rabbi forgot to take the tablet out of the golem's mouth, and the creature fell into a frenzy, running out into the dark alleys of the ghetto and knocking down those who got in his way, until the rabbi caught up with him, said, 'Open wide,' reached in under his tongue, and removed the tablet. And at that moment, the creature fell lifeless. All that was left of him is the dwarfish clay figure that may be seen today in the new synagogue." Curiously enough, the new synagogue itself was preserved by the Nazis. They thought, since they were going to eradicate the Jews from the face of the earth, it would serve as a museum of Judaica, so that the works of that vanished race could be seen by the succeeding Aryans. With friends like that, who needs enemies? Anyway, Eleazar of Worms has preserved the secret formula for making a golem. And shall we mention it here? The procedures involved cover some 23 folio columns and require knowledge of the alphabets of the 221 gates, which must be recited over each of the golem's organs. The word Emet, which means truth, should be marked on its forehead. To destroy the creature, the first letter must be obliterated, forming the word Met, whose meaning is death. Letters are for combining to produce words. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was celled and soldered in the thought before the pitch was forking to a sun. Before the veins were shaken in their sieve, blood shot and scattered to the winds of light, of a ribbed original of love.
Millions of happy, self-fighting, now,
What have I done?
No go, no go.
I'm not just the
The Mogo on the Go-Go-Go, you
myself.
Mean?
Myself, exactly. I think I'll saddle mine up right now, right to the beach.
Okay. See you later. Bye-bye. Somebody just woke me up here.
You can't ride those things. They're too small. A great big one you can ride.
Nope.
Like Baron Munchausen did.
Okay, bye-bye.
We have two, count them, two bubbles
on the
fabulous
amazing.
Yeah. Astounding. Astonishing.
Well, you know,
fantastic, unbelievable, preposterous. Boycott.
Right. Well, you know, that's something we've been trying to put in their minds for, what, 7 or 8 years now. We're sending out subliminal messages. Don't call 844-425. Don't call 844-425.
But you see, being such a scab and crossing this line of death, I can say with utmost certainty that this boycott is probably a perfect evidence boycott. The thing that he is not operating the boards, I...
You know where Mr. Evidence is tonight?
I can find no evidence of his whereabouts.
We know where.
He's listening.
Untrue. He's in Kentucky.
Well, I just wish I was there operating the board. But when he calls, I can hang up on him.
Yuck. And is that the height of your ambition?
How?
Hanging up on Puzzling Evans?
That's not
really kosher, is it? Is it?
And not only that,
Telegram.
Threatened to receive a call from the famous Jeremy, head of the LA show, whose date has now been bumped forward to July.
Listen to that poor soul yowling at himself.
Al can't be here.
Come on in, Al. It's safe.
He won't be here.
Come on, crawl up on the microphone. Now
it's me, Oslo Bendix.
Well, we'll give you his phone, home phone number right
now.
Here,
what is truth versus what is not? Versus what is not?
The mind chew off the mark so you can't be what is.
Born on a mountaintop in Tennessee, greenest state in the land, yet free, raised in the woods, till he knew every tree, killed in the bar when he was only three. Davy Crockett,
right,
the wild frontier.
And his lovely wife, Cookie.
That's right.
What a doll she is.
Cookie. That sounds good.
She can break
no disc. Oh,
toes.
No. We can't have that. Let's see if we can't change this bad fortune, Cookie fortune. What about it? What about it? What? About it.
There is something that I do,
what
and that is to exercise my mind. Exercise is important because without it, what is not used is lost. You use it or you lose it. If there's two people and one of them runs up all the stairs all the time,
used
that person will have strong legs. Another person who takes the escalator or the elevator or takes the escalator and never advances on it will not gain strength in his legs. Now look at the situation created by intermediary devices, which we have now. It's a truism that most tech titans cannot write their own name. When they have to, they make what they call
a pharmacist's scrawl or a squiggle.
What happened?
Since they're incapable of forming letters.
Yes,
like
we know who this is. It's not Jerry Jeff Caller Jr.
Don't mock that guy. He's a true subgenius. I can't understand why
old Gabofred didn't care for the founder of that particular church.
Well, calm the old boy down. What's the word for friend?
Amy,
Bala.
Hello? Collar's still moving, Hal.
Yeah. Swat him again.
Keep getting off
made
my
out
face.
Of plastic, nice. But it sure does a good job.
Okay, we're all alone now. Let's just drive the
There's
show.
Collars all over the screen door.
I know, but keep driving.
Well, look, there's that one little collar that's all lit up and everything is. Put a bunch of those in the jar and maybe you can read comic books at night.
Okay, we'll put one in. Okay, I caught one. It's in the jar. He was on the phone a minute ago. Now he's in the jar. Okay, don't.
He gave up.
Thing.
The Tijuana Bible quotes were too much for his soul to bear.
Hirohito.
Will tie Hirohito through the inboard magneto of an RAF mosquito.
Everybody could be heard. It was better then.
Are you referring to the Hinckley Commission?
Yes, Hinckley Commission must follow script. Do not worry about one gunman who blasted from side with mustache puzzling
evidence. Yeah, right, right, right.
Not puzzling evidence.
As a quondam quotidian member of the Ed Hinckley Commission to investigate the assassination of Bob Dobbs, I resent the allegation and I defy the allegator.
It's not funny, Bob.
Come on. Don't tell me funny. I know funny. And that is funny.
You know funny. We funny. You know funny. You can talk to Bob. But it may be a somewhat one-way conversation.
Bob!
Go ahead, Bob. Try talking to him.
Bob?
That's the way to begin.
Bob?
She's calling Bob.
She's calling Bob. Just say what you've got to say, and maybe Bob will chip in.
Bob? She's calling Bob.
Bob. Bob.
Bob.
Bob.
Bob.
Bob.
Bob.
Bob.
Bob.
Bob.
Bob.
Bob.
Bob. She's calling Bob.
Bob.
Bob. No answer.
Bob.
I've been phoning. Has anybody seen Bob?
Bob.
You're going to want to place yourself here. I'm in California.
Has anybody seen my Bob?
Bob has not been discovered yet. That body's lying in that locked room somewhere. No one knows about. So now they knew Bob was dead. But then finally it was put on the answer.
Hey, Bob.
Well, I think it's important to know that Bob always said that after he had a jump, that he would always, soon thereafter, go and urinate because that lessens the chance of
car battery now.
VD, and so he would always urinate.
VD and 3D.
He had, had sex.
Do you like the subgenius religion? Would you like to go to some other religion?
But he had $100,000 embezzled from him, so he's out doing this backbreaking work, which really cost him his life in the end.
Backbreaking.
And there was no reason for him to be doing this.
Backbreaking, sick, making, foolhardy, old lardy.
By 1990, he would have had 25% of $90 million. That's what had come in by then. But Bob, one of the things that made him delightfully unpredictable, he gets into this car. He takes off toward the lights of a faraway service station, riding on the flat tire. Well, the guy is looking at it, and he realizes at the station, this thing's been tampered with. And the station attendant actually took that tire, replaced it, and kept it. Because he was going to show it to the police. He thought something was really up. And I think so, too. I think that was the second warning for Bob. It's very, very complex to lay this out. But gradually, Bob is swept along by fate until it comes to that last evening. Now, every time Bob stayed in a hotel, or a motel, whatever it is, there were unusual things happening that last day of his life. That night, and this is the part I think as a mystery that I like about the Bobbies, he's in the apartment, Bob double locks everything. He'd been robbed in Chicago. He makes sure nobody's coming there. He's an extraordinarily light sleeper. There are things in that apartment that should have been there that weren't. There were things that were in that apartment that shouldn't have been there at all. Among the things that should not have been in that apartment were whiskey. Bob was a teetotaler. Cigarettes.
Yeehaw.
Bob did not smoke. Anyway, I thought there was a treasure trove of evidence that were there.
Evidence.
What was missing? Some of the albums were gone that Bob had these pictures. Now, this
these fine albums are not available
there
in any store. To get yours, write to